back to the Restoring Darkness podcast, hosted by Mark Baker of Soft Lights Foundation and Michael Colligan of the Lighting and Darkness Foundation. Two foundations working together. We disagree on some things, but we have the same end goal in mind, and that is better outdoor lighting at night, responsible outdoor lighting at night. If you want to support the work of the Lighting and Darkness Foundation, you go to restoringdarkness.com and click the donate link. Or you can even volunteer your time. You can be a guest on the show. Come on the show and tell us why, what your angle on the whole situation is. You can also go to softlights.org. Mark's got a great petition about the headlights of cars and all the problems they cause before the FDA right now. I think the last time I checked, Scott, it had 60. Scott's the producer. Mark's the co-host. Mark, I think it had 60,000 signatures or something like that.
Yes, it just reached 60,000.
Wow, that's incredible. So you can support Mark's work at softlights.org, and I can tell you right now that one of the things Mark and I don't disagree on is those crazy headlights that blind us and blind cyclists and motorists on the road and cause all sorts of accidents. It's actually not even a question. It's just a matter of making the change now. So go to softlights.org or restoringdarkness.com. Today's show, we have Phil Edwards. He's a professor of epidemiology and statistics at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, one of the world's leading public health universities. His research has focused on road safety, particularly of pedestrians, and he has used interrupted time series analysis methods to evaluate the effects of 20-mile-per-hour traffic speed zones on road injuries in London and the effects of reduced street lighting on road casualties and crime in England. Most recently, he has researched construction site injuries in lower-income countries where rapid urbanization requires construction on an unprecedented scale. I would say that that's also happening in Canada too, the unprecedented scale of urban construction, but I think that's a conversation for another day. His best website for reference is really long and hard to say, so you're just going to have to go to the restoringdarkness.com website, and the link will be posted right there where you can check out his work. Dr. Phil Edwards, welcome to the Restoring Darkness podcast.
Hello, thank you for inviting me.
Hi, Phil. Welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here. I have a lot of questions for you today, so I'm looking forward to hearing some and learning something. Could I ask you on the first question here? There's a really big word on your website. It's epidemiology, and I've heard this word before, but it's kind of like, I'm not sure I know what it means. Could you tell us about epidemiology?
Epidemiology comes from the Greek for epi, which is among, and demos, which is the people. So it's the study of, it's the study of things in the population, among study of events among people. And but epidemiology is basically, it's the study of disease in populations. And my research over the last 20 years or so has been in the study of road traffic injuries. So it's the study of a particular type of disease, which is often caused by cars. So my research, and we're going to talk about today, is to do with the epidemiology of road traffic injuries in relation to reduced street lighting. It's a more complicated name for public health, really. I mean, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine is a centre for excellence in public health teaching and research. So basically, it's about the health of the population. Yes, a fancy word, epidemiology, but it's the study of disease, the causes, the determinants of disease in the population.
Well, so this is a really interesting thing, because I don't know that that we believe that a car crash is anything related to a disease. Like, so how does public health and car crashes, how do they relate?
Well, I mean, an injury is a form of ill health. So it's kind of a I know. The word, I suppose, thinking about it as a disease. I mean, it is a disease in the sense that after the invention of the private motor vehicle, there was an epidemic of road traffic injuries. So, you know, it's a problem, a healthcare problem, where the the causes aren't bacteria or viruses. They're, you know, they're fossil fuel energy turned into kinetic energy, and an impact on the skeleton and, you know, the brains of human beings. So, you know, head injuries and fractures and so on, internal bleeding. It's a disease, isn't it? Disease is another word for, you know, not being of good health. So it's road traffic injuries are a disease.
Oh, that's a different way for me to view it. So I think of disease as having to be like a virus or, I don't know, a stomach ache. But if you're saying if disease is considered as not of being of good health, that really opens my eyes to something. I could really use that information. Is that really what the way you use it? Disease is not being of good health?
At the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, we've got research departments, and we've got a department of infectious disease epidemiology. So infectious diseases are diseases caused by viruses like COVID and HIV and so on. But then we've also got a department of non-communicable disease epidemiology. So cancer isn't caused by a virus or bacteria. You know, there's sort of genetic kind of factors that predispose people to these conditions, and I suffered a stroke, and that's not caused by bacteria or viruses. So there's a bunch of diseases that are not transmitted by viruses, and they're called non-communicable diseases. So yeah, cancers and heart attacks, all this kind of stuff. It's mainly due to lifestyle choices. So, you know, what we eat and how we travel is going to impact on our health.
Yeah. So in the United States, I believe that these car crashes was the number one cause of death in Americans until Ralph Nader came along and was able to get a law passed in 1966. And so that was the number one cause of death, was this new technology, the motor vehicle. One thing I get is confusing to me is that epidemiology. I write epidemiology. Oh gosh, didn't say that right. Epidemiological data, and then people will come to me and say, "Well, we can't rely on anecdotal evidence." What's the difference between epidemiological data that can be trusted and used in a report versus anecdotal data? Or anecdotal evidence?
I guess I don't know exactly what we mean by anecdotal, unless we're talking about what people have noticed. Oh, I've noticed that, you know, this is causing this problem. Epidemiological data, like you've got the Center for Disease Control in the US, I think, that, you know, these are organizations that will collect information from healthcare providers. So you've got information on hospital admissions, information on deaths, and information on hospital operations and so on. This information is hard evidence, in the sense that, you know, we know this has happened, and there's maybe even electronic records goes into a healthcare record. So epidemiological data is just more trusted data, I think. Anecdotal evidence data, to me, suggests that it's something that someone has noticed. You know, maybe there's no objective measure, you know. Epidemiological data usually implies, like, a cancer registry, for example. If we're interested in cancer survival, the onset of a cancer will be recorded in a cancer registry, and the stage of the cancer at diagnosis will be recorded by the oncologist. And these data are more trusted, I think, for any kind of analyses of factors that can be implemented to reduce the severity of these illnesses.
Right. So it's about this trust. And so if we're trying to advocate for protection of people, you know, there are forces out there that'll try to make the data seem untrustworthy. So they will say, well, they didn't do it in a laboratory. They didn't really medically study it. Kind of leads into the work that you do. And so I would like to ask you about something, a report that I was sent recently. In the United States, there's something called the Governor's Highway Safety Association, GHSA. And so there's this chart they published that really looks astonishing. So starting from 2010 up through 2021 or so, they have daytime pedestrian deaths and nighttime pedestrian deaths charted. The daytime deaths are pretty much flat. There's a slight increase over time. It's not that large. But the pedestrian deaths at night is skyrocketed, like almost doubled, thousands and thousands of people dying at night walking around. I would say, wow, that's right about when LED lights came out. Maybe it's LED headlights, LED streetlights, LED floodlights, flashing lights on emergency vehicles. Nobody can see at night. Have you encountered any data like this in the UK? Are you working on anything like that? Is there anything you can tell us about? Do you have any knowledge about this situation?
I don't have about LED, although the study which I did in which was published in 2015 did look at the effect of local authorities in the UK replacing their streetlights with LED lights, and we didn't find there was any effect on road traffic crashes associated with the change to LED lighting. But I think, you know, I don't know of any studies that have looked at LED lighting on cars and pedestrian injuries. I don't know of that. There's certainly studies that have looked at crime, but not pedestrian injuries.
Okay. You have a question?
Yeah, I do. So you did a study in 2015 there where you said there was no effect. So they switched from HPS, high pressure sodium, I'm assuming, to a higher Kelvin, more uniform, broader based LED light fixture, which creates apparently higher visual acuity, yet this had no effect on pedestrian safety.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we collected data from every local authority in the UK, and we managed to get data from 62 local authorities. I don't know what the equivalent is in Canada or the US, but basically, you know,
it would be a municipality, it would be called in Canada, United States.
Yeah. Something like, and so every local authority in England and Wales has got responsibility for lighting the public highway. That's kind of always been their remit. And but because of concerns about climate change and carbon footprint, some local authorities started to reduce the provision of street lighting at night, or they started to change their lighting from high pressure sodium to LED lighting. There's a bunch of changes. There was dimming of lights, and some of them even turned the lights out, you know, so from midnight till 5:30 a.m. local authorities were turning off the street lights. It was totally, you know, pitch black from midnight till 5:30 a.m. and there was a lot of concern in the health department, like maybe this is causing road traffic crashes, or, you know, pedestrians are getting knocked over. And they commissioned my research group to evaluate these effects. So we got data on all of the streets where the lighting had been changed, and the date that this had been the change had been made. And then we linked it with data collected by the police in the UK on road traffic injuries. And we found no evidence that the changes in these street lighting provision was associated with any increase in road traffic injuries.
That is unbelievable. Hang on one second. I have to totally understand what you're saying here. Completely. Sorry, Mark. Mark had a great line of questioning, but this is a little tangent. We're going to get back to number four in a second, and maybe we'll get to number four through here. So you looked at areas, multiple strategies from these different local authorities and ways to reduce energy, right? Reduce carbon footprint. And those strategies were dimming, were changing lights to LED, and they were turning off lights. All three strategies were employed in these various areas, and this had no impact on pedestrian safety or increasing in pedestrian harm.
No, I had no impact on it, which was a surprise to a lot of people. But I mean, it's kind of reassuring for the local authorities who were doing it that they weren't causing any harm to people by turning the lights off or reducing the lighting.
That is the most unbelievable thing I've ever heard. Like, everybody in Canada, the United States, I don't know how it is in Britain, I'm sure it's the same in all the English-speaking world. Whenever there's some kind of catastrophic event where somebody is killed, injured, robbed, broken, we need to put more light. Problem is there wasn't enough light. And the judges will order them to put more lights. The lawyers will sue because there's not enough light. The light is the wrong color. It's not uniform enough. And, you know, people can't see properly. And your study is indicating, or your research has indicated, that there's no difference. That headlights on cars or whatever's happening out there with lighting, the electric lighting, street lighting, is not increasing or decreasing people's safety. It's doing something else.
Yeah, the reduction in street lighting in these kind of towns and villages in the UK was not associated with an increase in road traffic injuries. But we have got another interesting finding, I have to tell you, because we did some more detailed analysis of crime, and because there was no evidence overall that there was an increase in crime either with these changes in street lighting provision. And a lot of people were upset because they, you know, a lot of people in the UK think, oh, the street lighting to make us feel safer. You know, I need to be able to see where to put my key in the front door and stuff. But the local authorities say, no, you know, we've got an obligation to produce street lighting on highways. It's not for you to be able to see your front door when you stumble in from the pub, you know.
Sure. Kind of,
and but there was no change in, there's no increase in crime. And in fact, in one study area, which we looked at in detail, the reduction in street lighting was associated with a statistically significant reduction in crime. So specifically thefts from cars. So, you know, you turn the lights off and there's a reduction in people breaking into cars. And, you know, I think we could probably see a plausible reason for this is that, you know, if you leave your laptop on the passenger seat in the car, you know, having a street light on is going to make this more visible to an opportunist who's walking past, someone who sees it, you know. But the lights go off, you're not going to see into the cars. And our study showed that there was a reduction in breaking into cars with a reduction in street lighting at night.
So, Mark, I hate to do this, but I'm going to ask Dr. Phil a question. Or Dr. Phil, is it Dr. Phil? Phil, Dr. Edwards, what do you want me to call you here? This is fascinating, by the way.
Just call me Phil.
Phil, okay. So, Phil. Yeah. I am a darkness restoration and night preservation advocate representing a foundation that represents the lighting industry in Canada, United States. Mark Baker runs the softlights.org. He thinks LEDs are bad for people's health. He would like to see a reduction in the adoption of LED lighting or an elimination, which we always argue. I tell him he's crazy. But that's a different topic for a different day. What else do you know that we should know? Like, just if you have anything else, like those two gems you just put on the table, please put more of them on the table, because we're looking to move this forward. We want to get Mr. Strawman out of the way, who says more light equals more safety, more light equals less crime, more light equals less accidents. Mr. Strawman, you're not allowed to challenge him. You have to prove him wrong. He never has to prove you wrong. Right. So I'm constantly battling Mr. Strawman. What other gems can you give me to give back to him?
I think those are the main ones, actually. Okay. I mean, I thought we were just going to be talking about sleep, road safety. But no, the crime one is an interesting one. I mean, this is all published in peer reviewed journals. So happy to share these with you if you want to follow up on it. But I don't have any other big findings associated with the street lighting.
Is it fair to conclude that the desire for people to have more electric outdoor light at night is really a way to soothe their own fear of the dark and has nothing to do with pedestrian safety or reductions in crime, according to your research?
I mean, I would agree with that. because I think, you know, there are people I know with kids who are leaving the lights on all night because the kids don't want to be waking up and finding themselves in the dark. So I think there's a certain, what the way you put it is, you know, soothing their fear of the dark. I think there's kind of fundamentally a kind of a, I'm not a sociologist or historian, so I can't, I mean, just, I would tend to agree with the idea that, you know, we've become, you know, there's a fear of the darkness, and sticking lights on everywhere addresses that fear. And people feel that their local authority, the local government, is taking better care of their needs by putting lights on everywhere.
Mm.
But yeah, it costs money. You know, keeping the lights on all night long is something that, you know, a lot of people in their houses would you know, say, you think, why did you leave the lights on all night? You know, it's kind of wasting electricity, you know. And I think that in the UK, certainly, where local authorities have said, look, we can save like millions of pounds in energy costs by turning the lights off at night. Mm. You know, when relatively few people are out and about, you know, it's kind of most, the lights come on at 5:30 in the morning when shift workers are coming and so on. Hello?
Mm. Yeah, we're here. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, so Phil, So I link to these studies, and they're very important to our work. And I'm wondering if I already have your study and your name's just on there. I just hadn't met you before. What year was your study published?
It was 2015. Yeah. Sorry, I should be better.
Okay, so it's a few years. I might have a link to that already then. Do you know the title or anything like that? You can send it to us, but I was just curious in my own mind. Do you think a new study is required now that so many more LED lights have come out and there's such glare with LED headlights and there's so much more glare in my mind? I can barely drive at night. It's too hard. And so do you think we need another study at this point?
I think it would be helpful to have, because our study is just in the UK, and, you know, so compared to the US or Canada, it's not a big place. And I would have thought that, you know, you have the data, and so a larger study would be possible. And if there's uncertainty, which I think there is still about the impact of LED lighting on public health, then a larger study would be the way to go.
I would like to know more details about your study, because I find people will attack, you know, knowledge that you provide. Oh, there's this study, and they will have excuses for why that study is flawed, right? Maybe your study is flawed. How would you know that there's no reduction? Like, how do you trust your own data if you're getting just, let's say, police reports? Maybe that's like undercounting, for example. How do you build trust into your data?
We do sensitivity analyses, so there is a chance that some of the data might be, you know, maybe that people are more likely to report road traffic crashes after the lights have gone out. You know, because they think, oh, that's got to be to do with the light going off. So, you know, there might be a reporting bias. People might be more likely to report these events after the lighting's gone out at night. So the way we can look at this is we can do an analysis of data that excludes the period immediately after the lights have gone out. So we can do some sensitivity analyses to assess the possible scenarios of there being some kind of bias in the data.
Wow, that sounds complicated. What do you need to do that? You need a big supercomputer. You need like you're a statistician. I guess you're pretty good with math. Like, maybe you could share with our audience, like, how does that work exactly?
Well, you need to know the date. You need to know the times that these things are happening to be able to exclude them in a computer. We say, well, look, we only want to know what the effect is on road traffic injuries or crimes after sunset, you know. So you have to like know, well, what time is it dark in different times of the year? So you know, we've got the police data. In the UK, every road traffic injury on the highway is supposed to be reported to the police, but yeah, there is some under-reporting. So another thing in answer to your question about that would be, we just look at the fatalities and the serious injuries, because it's the minor injuries that are more likely to go unreported to the police. You know, somebody has got a sort of a bruise from being hit by a car, then they might be less likely to report it to the police. So if we just focus on deaths and serious injuries, that's a more robust analysis, and which we did, and again, found no evidence for an increase in road traffic injuries.
When you're looking at this, what I'm hearing from you is that the data already exists largely in these municipalities in North America, likely. So you're saying the police will have similar data to that we have in England and in Wales, because, you know, largely these organizations in Canada, I'm sure the police record every fatality that happens on the road, and they have the time and when it happened and the circumstances surrounding it in some sort of structured manner, put in a database somewhere. And we can also find out when municipalities changed their lights or made a change to highway lighting or to roadway lighting. And so this data exists. It's just a matter of getting it and then analyzing it correctly, and we could have these kinds of studies everywhere. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I we had a team of about three people, and basically we spent the first year and a half or 2 years of our study just trying to get the data from the municipalities. Mm. So it was kind of like finding out who in that municipality is in charge of the data, you know, and do they know how to extract it from their system? If not, can we help them? You know, I mean, because having everything in a database isn't necessarily the norm. It's ideal, but, you know, you can't assume that everyone knows how to get the data out. So, yeah, we would be sent Excel spreadsheets, and then we would have to kind of process it to try to make it into a format that was usable for our analysis. But basically, yeah, the data are recorded. And if a municipality has decided to turn the lights out in a particular street at night to save energy, then I think with due diligence, they should be making a record of which street they've done it in and when it's gone ahead. And so the data should be accessible in theory. And then, well, our report, I've posted the link in the chat to you guys, will explain the methodology in that, but it's called an interrupted time series analysis. Basically, you're looking at a series of events like road traffic injuries over time. So you're seeing, is there a trend down anyway? And then the lights are changed at a particular time point, and we want to see, is there a sudden step change? Is it continue to go down, but is it a step down when the, or was it a step up? We hypothesized there'd be a step up. Lights go out, there's a step up in road traffic. But as I say, we found no evidence for an increase.
That is astounding. That is astounding. Yeah. Because when your LED lighting is a higher color temperature, which is assumed that helps people see better. It is also more uniform. So that means that there's less contrast between the poles. So you have a more uniform lighting system. It's really interesting. I have two conclusions from doing this show. One, LED lighting systems are built to be viewed from above, not to be viewed from going through them. You understand what I mean? So if you were like, the way that we design exterior lighting right now is so that people could see it from above. That's an accident. It's not meant to be that way. But everything is super clear and awesome if you look down from a helicopter. But to go through these spaces, Mark brings up a whole bunch of different problems that can happen from luminance and all that sort of stuff. So my first conclusion is that the lighting industry is building lighting systems to be viewed from space. And my second conclusion from this show is that, from doing all these almost 100 podcasts now on this, is that lighting is neither the cause nor the solution to crime or safety. It's not a cause of crime, and lighting or lack thereof, and it's not a solution to crime. Could you design a study that would, you said yes, it increases smash and grab crime, which is like smash the window, take the laptop. Could you design an epidemiological study that would look at violent crime? So people attacking one another. Would it be possible to do that with, in your experience?
Yes, definitely. I mean, our study included 730,000 assaults, so violent crimes in the streets in these municipalities. I mean, there were 582,000 burglaries and 68,000 robberies and 730,000 assaults, some kind of violence. And there was no evidence that the reduction in the street lighting had changed the rates of those events. But I think you were saying if there's other things that other factors are important. I think CCTV is an important policing device,
deterrent.
And as far as I'm aware, I'm not a lighting professional, but as far as I understand, that the quality of the image on the CCTV is impacted by the lighting that's available at the time.
That's true.
So it may be that LED lighting will mean that criminals are more likely to be caught and therefore not going to be reoffending if the lighting is adequate for the CCTV.
So let me unpack that a little bit before I go over to you. So you're saying that you couldn't distinguish, there is a deterrent impact of CCT. So if people have closed circuit cameras on a street and people know they're there, so it's Big Brother's watching, this stops people from committing burglaries and other violent crimes. Okay, that's what you're saying. And that the LED lighting may make those images from the CCT cameras clearer and better for the police to make arrests with. But overall, Your study showed that could be a possible thing that needs to be understood better. But overall, your study showed no increase in violent crime, burglaries, attacks, or anything with the reduction of outdoor lighting at night.
Correct.
That's astounding.
And Michael, you continue to ask Phil that thing, and he keeps telling us the same result, right? He's not budging.
No, I didn't ask him about violent crime, Mark. I didn't ask him about violent crime.
Right, now you've asked him about violent crime, and he seems like he's telling us something here. We should be listening to what Phil is telling us here.
Yes, agreed.
It sounds important. The glare, though, from LED lights will wash out the CCTV stuff. I've seen this many times. Now you can't see anything because it's a glare bomb right into the camera. So that's an issue with that whole security thing. There's no deterrent, in my understanding, for crime. It's a crime of opportunity. They're walking by. They see the purse. They smash and grab. It takes seconds. They don't stop to think, I might get caught on this later. There's nothing in their heads. They see a purse, they take it. So I don't think that's any preventing any crime either. But there is serious adverse health impacts to this light. So there may be excuses from the industry or utility companies.
And just for those listening, that's a claim made by Mark I may agree with, I may not. But let's go back to let's make sure we stay on Phil's expertise here, which you don't understand the health impacts of lighting, Phil. You said that you're not a lighting guy, right?
No, but we did some interviews with residents in areas where the lighting had been changed. And I mean, fear of concerns about personal safety was raised several times. But some people said, you know, it's great. The streetlights have gone off. I get so much more sleep now. You know, I don't have a light shining into my bedroom. You know, it's great. I can actually get sleep through the night.
Sure.
So some people were reporting improved sleep. So there has to be a positive health benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is some evidence around circadian rhythms and street lighting. You know, people need to be able to, I think, you know, the melatonin production is affected by the lighting. I think, you know, the quality of sleep is definitely associated with the provision of lighting at night.
Mark Baker's gone full man crush now. This is extremely good news for what we've been searching for over the last couple of years, Phil. Go ahead, Mark.
So just this week, I interacted with a city in the United States that they're kind of behind the game and they're just getting ready to install LED streetlights everywhere. And one of their main claims for doing it is the safety. both for crime and for vehicle crashes. That's their main claim. So I pointed out, like, I said, well, actually, you know, we've seen all this other evidence. This is not a good idea, especially from our point of view, disability access. So we know for sure many people are suffering seizures, non-epileptic seizures, epileptic seizures, migraines, anxiety, and all kinds of other neurological impacts from this LED light. So in the United States, there's something called the Americans with Disabilities Act. If they do an alteration to a street, which is converting to LEDs as an alteration, they have to make the street readily accessible. So I notified the city that this was a problem for them that they need to address. And they sent me a report from, guess who? The utility company. The utility company has a PowerPoint PDF presentation with sort of just one-liners explaining how this light is safe, how it reduces crime, how it increases. It's very hard to rebut because it's reduced down to like this sort of one, line without the underlying data to sort of get into the studies. Have you those kinds of, does anybody go after your research and say, wow, you know, or do they still try to manipulate things? Have you have that experience?
I was invited to present at a lighting conference in London, where basically the people had all their kind of, you know, fancy lighting out on display. And, I was invited to talk at a little round table thing on does lighting reduce crime? And I mean, I would just go along with the evidence I had. I don't have an agenda to do with the lighting industry, but yeah, mm-hmm. they were not very welcoming of what I was telling them. I think, you know, there's some big bucks involved in the lighting industry.
I'm gonna push back on that right there, because I'm in the lighting industry. I'm lighting solutions man today, so I'm wearing the actual installation uniform of my company. My hat and the thing, lighting solutions. If those who are listening, I have a black work shirt on with a badge on it and a black hat with a badge that says lighting solutions on it. I think the Mr. Straw Man is very powerful, Phil. You know, you have to prove that the opposite. I don't have any obligation to prove that more light equals more safety. What are you talking about? Everybody knows that's true. That's an axiomatic presupposition the lighting industry has been operating on since Edison. You know, since the Eiffel Tower, more light equals more safety. Come on, get with the program, buddy. You don't understand? Right? Be a good lighting boy. Get in line and make that as white as possible and the most. And there's no max lumens, only minimum, no max. Right? So that's what the lighting industry has been operating on. But I'm going to push back on this. I think darkness restoration and night preservation is the single largest financial opportunity for the lighting industry. Because I think everyone's going to get rich as soon as we start going out there and changing all these lights back away from LED to warmer color, not away from LED, Mark, sorry, it's going to be LED, but getting rid of the glare, lowering the Kelvin temperature, all these sorts of things. This is a major revenue opportunity. So I'm going to say to those people sitting around the table, though, you're daft. You should get in the program with Phil and realize that less light equals more money for us. Less light killing bats, less light causing circadian damage, less light wrecking people's sleep and killing moths and birds and everything else. This is a money maker for us. It is not a less revenue. It's more revenue because you need more light fixtures. You need more lighting controls. You need all the things that the lighting industry is trying to push, Phil. So I'd push back against those. If I was at that table, I'd tell them we're all crazy. Get with Phil and let's get this thing going. What was my question though for you? Yeah, and that was at a lighting conference in London.
Yeah.
Yeah, the lighting industry's just got their head in the sand on this issue so badly. I'm trying to pull it out, Phil. I'm trying to pull it out.
It was a few years ago, so I mean, I don't know, maybe it's changed.
Not yet. It's getting there. There's a lot of things. Mark, we're coming up on 40 minutes here with Phil. This has been a mind-blowing podcast. Can I just say it? Mind-blowing, actually. Mark. This is your last question for Phil, and then we're gonna shut it down.
Okay, Phil. My last question then is about collecting data that will help us get some of these problems solved. What do the government agencies, let's maybe focus on the UK? and they used to be called Public Health England, but now like is some name I can't pronounce. What do we need to do to get them to like maybe hire you to do another study, maybe to reach out and start? Really, we need the government to start getting more of these studies. Is there a way to make this happen?
That's a good question. I mean, I think to repeat the study we did in the UK, in the US and Canada would be a really valuable and important contribution to the scientific literature. And it is possible to do that. And I mean, I would be very happy to consult on anything if anyone wants to attempt to do this. Because, yeah, that once you got the data, then it is a case of turning the handle for the statistical modeling. You know, it's kind of just that bit's fairly straightforward. It's the getting of the data that's tricky and getting out of the systems. But, you know, there's plenty of people in the lighting, you know, the highways departments are, they're interested themselves in evaluating what they're
sure.
doing. So I think, you know, just get them on board. Try to get in touch, build a network of people who want to evaluate the street lighting provision in the US and Canada. And I think, you know, the government hopefully would be able to put some money to support it with some research assistance and people to do the analysis. It's definitely something that can be repeated. We've done it, say, in the UK with 62 municipalities, but a bigger is always better. So, you know, let's do it on hundreds in North America. It'd be great.
Wow. This is, I'm so happy that I've met you, Phil Edwards, and that I got to talk to you. Yeah. And Mark, you know, this is one of our best shows so far in terms of information. I don't know how good we are, but hey, we're just trying to put it out there, folks. So if you want to support this kind of work, in terms of darkness restoration, night preservation, education, you go to restoringdarkness.com because we're going to teach lighting people how to do this. Lighting people don't know how to do this. That's right. Contractors, distributors, agents, they don't know what they're talking about. So they're afraid to say it. So we need to teach them. We have lighting specialist one talks about lighting all the time. We're going to have darkness specialist one. And then we're going to have darkness specialist two. And we're going to teach people that this industry that delivers two things, lighting and darkness, and that's why we called it the Lighting and Darkness Foundation. Go to restoringdarkness.com, click the donate link. If you want to support Mark's crazy work, the no LED work, you go to softlights.org. I've signed his petition. I've shared his petition. It's got 60,000 signatures. It's got nothing to do with whether or not you like LEDs or don't like LEDs. It's got to do with getting rid of them in crazy headlights that are taking out cyclists, motorcycles, and other pedestrians and everything else. This is not a question anymore. This is just happening. And the auto industry, just like the lighting industry, has their heads in the sand. And we need to pull their heads out of the sand and wake the FDA up and tell them to do their jobs. But most importantly, if you've made it to the end of this show with me and Mark Baker and Phil Edwards, we thank you for listening, watching, liking, subscribing, all that kind of stuff. Bye for now. See you next time.